listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hello, friends. We are back at the Tennis.com podcast, Ed McGrogan and Steve Tigner, to bat around the latest results and happenings in the tennis world. Steve, maybe from last weekend, you know, what was, before we kind of get into some things I wanted to talk about this week, you know, from last weekend, it was, you know, as you described it, I think it's a time where we get maybe a wide variety of stories, and some of them, because of really the spotlight that's maybe not on them, maybe come out even better in the end. And I think, you know, we did get a few of those last week.
Yeah, I think when you have a section of time without, you know, you don't have Djokovic, Federer, Murray, Serena, Sharapova, any of the bigger names, you do get to focus on some of these other people. You know, there's a lot of tournaments that are, you know, and the fact that they're spread out gives more people a chance to go deeper in the tournaments. So I think you see some, you know, you tend to see younger players do better now. We saw a few 18-year-olds, Zverev on the men's side, Kazakina on the women's side, and especially for American fans, Taylor Fritz. You know, the tournament in Memphis, which was mostly Americans, was really a good opportunity for him, and you know, he took advantage of it, made it to the final there. So I think that's, if you're an American fan or a men's tennis fan, that's, you know, that was the story of the weekend, him reaching the final. He did lose to Nishikori, but for 18 years old, his third event, that's you know, pretty significant.
I found it somewhat humorous that Fritz's, when, you know, he was entered in singles and doubles in this tournament, and his doubles partner was Ryan Harrison, who I feel like I remember having a discussion really about Harrison, and it could be said for a number of other American players, you know, 5-6 years ago throughout time, where we do see we're kind of taken by a young player, a good run at an event. Harrison, obviously, someone who really has through injuries, through inability to just, you know, win the matches he's needed to win, you know, hasn't been able to bring that. And I think many people have really already moved past him. It's amazing how quickly things move in tennis. That does not seem that long ago. But
yeah, Harrison, you know, now he's taking pointers on his backhand from Fritz, from the 18-year-old. He's watching him for,
yeah,
to how to hit it. But yeah, it's hard, you know, it's hard to know. Fritz has a lot of good things about him, the serve, the fact that he's 6'4", and he's probably going to get bigger. Big forehand and backhand, good from both sides. But then, you know, and he does well in one tournament, makes the final, and then he loses in the first round of the next event, which isn't surprising. You know, he lost to Tim Smiechek, a player ranked around 100 or so. So you just don't, you know, it's hard to say. I would say right now you could say that Fritz has the good offensive weapons, but needs to improve on defense, speed, you know, retrieving, some of the basic stuff that is really more important than ever in men's tennis now. That's the, you know, those are the guys that win that can do both. So you sort of see some good things in Fritz and some reasons to wonder too.
Yeah, and I know I'm kind of invoking a lot of symbolism here, but I also kind of find it interesting that of the players he beats Michael Moe, who was a fellow junior, or really a former junior. And he goes on and beats two guys, Steve Johnson and Benjamin Becker, that are really the, you know, the epitome of playing college tennis and going through that stage of a career. Those two guys in Baylor and USC, really paying their dues in that respect, and they've touted that experience a lot in their time, you know, as becoming professionals and what it's made them now on the tour. Fritz obviously went a different route. He is a junior slam champ, and you know, really, we'd heard about his name a little bit last year too, especially if you were, I think, following those levels of tennis a bit, but you know, it's interesting with that, to, you know, there are different routes to the game. I also found last week that you could say the same for, you look at the champions and who had great results last week. You had 18-year-olds winning matches, getting very deep in tournaments. You had Venus Williams at 35 winning a title. You had Vinci in her early, 33, I believe. It was a, it's kind of a hodgepodge of all the different varieties of players out there.
Yeah, I think we saw the, youth do well, but they can only go so far. It's still, it's still kind of a tour where experience matters the most. Vinci beat Belinda Bencic, who's another 18-year-old who is, she's reached the top 10 now, so she's, we can definitely say she's for real. She's already really made it, and we'll expect a lot more from her, but she lost in the final to Vinci. Venus Williams, who we thought at the start of the year was fading a little bit. She had a rough start to the rough first month, but she wins a tournament. She she gets sort of back on track at 35. And then in Memphis, Fritz does well, but he can't. But Kana Shikori, the experienced player, the top five player, he comes away with that. So there's no big revolutions in the game. You just don't see those anymore.
What do you of Fritz and maybe a guy who is often who could be compared to him, or who he could be compared to? I really should say, Jack Sock. I mean, do you find that these two styles? Because what I gather from Sock with the massive forehand and Fritz, seemingly has that cool serve and an ability to find his way out of trouble, and also just to assert that shot over his opponents. I mean, what I'm asking less about what you think of the futures of these two, but is it more that it's these styles of players that maybe are throwbacks in a way to really the successful American men that you could think you could harken back to, of that Sampras era going into Roddick and guys like that possess that weapon, that maybe that's something that of the crop of American men's players and kind of this sort of this lull that the country's been in, maybe these guys have what's needed to kind of break through that ceiling.
Yeah, I think you come from, there's two different, Sock and Fritz are two different styles, two different strengths. Sock's really fast, like you said, has the huge forehand, runs around it as often as possible. He's got a big serve. I don't know if it has the variety of Fritz. Fritz is better, more solid from forehand and backhand. He's not as fast. I guess it depends on what we think works better now. Fritz is significantly younger. He stayed with Sock pretty well at the Australian Open. I don't know whose ceiling is higher. Fritz, I think, is better. It seems to be better at staying calm in matches. Sock is, he's sort of a work in progress as far as, I feel like, staying positive and not getting negative. I guess you would look at Sock and say he's more in the Roddick mode with a bigger, even bigger forehand. But Fritz is, I don't think Fritz fits a certain pattern. He reminds me of Sampras in the way he looks and acts and the way he serves, the way, where he's from, Southern California. But he obviously doesn't play Sampras' game. He plays a more modern game. Fritz is sort of, I think he's a little unique in that his backhand is pretty much as good as his forehand. So we'll see, we'll see which works better today in the next few years.
Yeah, and we will see, in particular Fritz and Sock, of course, who will be seeing those guys quite a bit, I think, over the remainder of this month and into next month. A few tournaments have given wild cards out to Fritz, Indian Wells, most significantly, and they'll get those opportunities right away too. So, big forehand, it's. You can't mention that without thinking of Juan Martín del Potro. That's still his forehands hitting the 2009 Open final against Federer, some of probably the biggest we've seen ever. And it seems like it was that long ago that he's played. Has played to that level. He probably will turn out to be, honestly, the peak of his career was that moment there. But Del Potro really has kind of had a, you know, just a really injury-filled career since that point. And he comes back this week in Delray Beach, wins his opener against Dennis Kudla, too, gets pretty easy scoreline, too, with that 1-4 or 4-1. I'm just losing track of which one it was. But you know, I guess what I wonder is, you know, what do you – does Del Potro at this stage of not only his career but of other players' careers, you know, does he really – possess that? Does he have that threat that is like, oh, he, you know, he is back, and if he rounds himself into form, you know, we can expect him to kind of maybe be one of those missing links that can influence the top of the game? Or what I wonder is if really, A, he's lost, you know, he's not only he has lost too much ground already with such a troubled few years, but really, I think, honestly, the players around him have only improved since that point.
Yeah, Del Po is now 27. He won the U.S. Open when he was 20. He's basically missed 3 years, three separate seasons. You know, he's coming back after having not played for 11 months, but he barely played in the year before that as well. So it's almost like a two-year layoff he's had with two separate wrist surgeries and even some other work. I think it's a, you know, he's, from what you could see last night, he still has his serve. He still has his forehand. That was amazing how good he was on that side. But it's all really will depend on the backhand and how he feels as far as his wrist goes. He didn't really ever swing through and hit one as hard as, you know, let one fly at all last night. He didn't need to. I think that match was great for Del Po, but I think Kudla was nervous. He didn't do everything he could to take advantage of the situation, take advantage of Del Po's backhand. I would guess that somebody else will do better in that regard pretty soon. But, you know, Del Potro sliced the backhand a lot. He sort of pushed through it. It was good enough. You know, maybe that's good enough to get him into the top 20. That's definitely not good enough for him to win Grand Slams. Maybe he felt some pain, or maybe – probably most likely he was just a little nervous about hitting through it and hurting himself or feeling pain again. He just doesn't want to do that. He said before the match that he was nervous, you know, really nervous, probably mainly about not going out and feeling pain again. I'm sure that would kill him. But I think, you know, it does feel like it's probably too late for him. You know, at this point, you probably shouldn't say that, in that we've had late Grand Slam winners, but all that time off, he'll have to have the backhand as good as it was when he was 20 to be at that, to get back to where he was. And it, you know, we'll see. It's,
yeah, right, and the rest of this, you know, this stretch of the year, I think is interesting for Del Potro in a few ways. You know, he'll be reintroduced to the game in this hard court stretch. I've always thought Del Potro is a pretty tough player at the Masters level events, where you're not getting best three of five, you're not stretched over 2 weeks. You know, he's had very good results in fact in Indian Wells in Miami before, and he reminds me kind of like a Tsonga type player in that respect, where, you know, he can catch fire and can, you know, beat anyone clearly with what he brings in that moment in those formats. But you know, when we're talking about seeing what the kind of resistance his backhand can handle and being tested over and over again, I'm curious to see really his schedule going forward altogether. I mean, you're not going to be able, you couldn't possibly test a backhand more than on a clay court, and that's, you know, where the season pretty much is going to head for 2 to 3 months pretty shortly. And also I wonder, you know, about, with the Olympics being in South America, how big of a deal that is to Del Potro. I can only sense that, or surmise that it would be, you know, a very important thing. He had a very memorable Olympics in 2012, losing to Federer 16-14, I believe, in a breaker. And obviously, even though he's Argentine, not Brazilian, it has to be such a huge moment for him to want to get to that. So I'm almost just as curious to see what he does in terms of that respect, because with injuries and with comeback, the schedule is almost just as important.
Yeah, I think he's probably building his season to that. He lost a long third set to Federer, and then he won the bronze over Djokovic in 2012. I'm sure he this is something he's thought about, and maybe he's working towards that as much as anything else, because it's just one event, one week. If he can get himself into proper shape for that, that seems doable. The other thing I was struck by is how popular he still is. If you were on Twitter during his match, people were happy to see him back. So, nobody's really forgotten him, and I think I think a lot of this, it's also true for a lot of the players. So he's a big part of the tour, and you really hope that he doesn't get hurt again.
Yeah, and I think that's really why I wanted to discuss Del Potro, is because it does seem, for all these for all of the setbacks he's had, and for all the time he's had off, he is still a name that generates that interest. And I wonder if when we think about Grand Slam champions, and there are a lot of one slam winners over careers. I think we often like to think of players who've done it in their youth and really just kind of broke the mold at that time. We hold them in such a different light than we see a player who wins one when they're when they're much older. I think the reflex is to call that kind of it's less about finally overcoming something and more of like, oh, it was untapped potential that you only managed to win one of these. I think some would even go so far as to call it like a fluke run or something. So I'm kind of thinking of one slam winners, like I think Michael Chang is perhaps a great example of winning one at such a young age, and his whole career was I think defined by that and that promise. That seems to be, I think, what we're still holding on to for Del Potro, whether it comes to light or not.
Yeah, I think for Del Potro, part of his, it's the tragic story that he could have done so much more, having won one when he was 20. Now it's different from Chang, who just never won one. Another one didn't really have the game in his era. And Del Potro, you feel like you don't know what would have happened. I don't think he would have won a lot more during that time. He wasn't going to take over number one, I don't think, from Djokovic or Rafa or Federer, but he would have been in the mix for sure. And he still could be. I think he can definitely win another one.
Yeah, and we'll close this. Just any thoughts on, for now at this point, Rafa, Serena, both of those two making their way into the news this week. Serena pulling out, it was flu-based. But we are, I guess, again, seeing really this is almost a retreat, the way Serena has gone lately, to years past where we're not seeing much of her at all, besides the biggest events. That sort of caveat said she'll be back in Indian Wells, as will Venus this year. Rafa as well, he goes again this week, but did not win last week in South America. Loses to TM and goes to Rio this week. Any thoughts on those two?
Well, I guess with Serena, you have, now that she's playing Indian Wells, maybe she's less likely, if she doesn't feel her best, maybe she's more likely to pull out of these tournaments. She has the Indian Wells. She has the points coming there. Whereas in the past, didn't have that. She would have to go straight to Key Biscayne, basically one tournament before the clay season. And with Rafa, he's playing more. We see a little less of Serena. See more than she feels like in the last 6 months. We've seen more of Rafa than we ever have. I didn't feel like he played that. He lost to Team, like you said, in a third set tiebreak. He looked tired in that match. Didn't get much on his serve. It was 85 degrees and humid, and you know, you're not used to seeing him get tired, but he did look like it in that match. He looked pretty good in his first round in Rio. I feel like he's playing well most of the time. There just keeps, you know, comes up with these moments when it looks like he's going to win, and then he just doesn't win that point. You know, against Team, he had a match point. Team hit a drill to forehand on the line. Maybe that just doesn't feel like the kind of thing that would have happened to him 3 or 5 years ago. But they, you know, there's just these moments when maybe the confidence isn't there. You don't see it often, but it still tends to come up. But I think, you know, I think working his way back, it seems to have, it seems since last year's U.S. Open in general, despite the loss at the Australian Open, the progress is good. Maybe just that little bit, that, you know, that little bit of confidence.
The bit that separates.
Yeah, it doesn't separate him anymore. So
yeah, it's true. Thinking about those are all the points that he would never drop really to anyone for quite a while there. So it's Rafa remains, I think, must see in that regard too, to where he takes us. Mm-hmm. I'll close with a podcast recommendation. As you are all listening to this, Steve, if I don't know if you indulge in other podcasts, but I'll let you recommend a favorite of your own. After, I will extol the virtues of the Awesome Etiquette podcast. That's I said that right. The Awesome Etiquette podcast. I think you should all check that out if you want to be nicer people. Any podcast recommendations from you, Steve?
I actually don't listen to any, but I'd like to try this Austin Etiquette. Can you tell me a little more of what it's about?
Awesome Etiquette.
Awesome Etiquette.
Yes. It's a, you know, it goes beyond table setting and thank you notes and such. I think it gives you the right tact and the right approach to potentially tricky situations in all walks of life. So generally helpful information.
I'll check it out. Maybe we can make this podcast more polite.
Yeah, it harkens from the Emily Post, if many of you probably recall that name. But that's my recommendation for you this week. There are other good podcasts as well out there. I'll get to those in due time. So our next podcast next Tuesday, we will obviously go over everything and anything in the world of tennis. So for Steve, I'm Ed. Thank you for listening to Tennis.com Podcast.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com Podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.